Welcome to the second episode of the X-Men TAS podcast. I am Willie.
I'm Sonia.
And today we are carrying right along with the next episode, Night of the Sentinels Part 2. And we're picking up right where we left off from the first episode, which was the introduction to the series. Things at the Mutant Control Agency are just starting to heat up.
So, to me, what's strange in this episode is that Morph dies pretty much right away. Like, really early on in the episode, and they don't show it actually happening. They, like, cut to a scene of Jean Grey using Cerebro to find out that he's dead, and then, you know, the story continues a little bit, and then they use a flashback from Wolverine to actually show you what happened. So they're using this kind of, like, different type of storytelling with the timeline. And it's only the second episode. It's not like they're, like, they're not, like, out of material. They're not getting bored yet. They're, like, they're going right for it with, like, a strange timeline in their episode.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're amping up the drama.
Yeah.
And they want a little bit of suspense about what happened.
Right.
And,
do you know, actually, why they kill off Morph in episode two? Is there a reason?
Yeah, he's not an X-Man.
Then why did they invent him?
No, I don't know if that's the answer.
Oh.
I think it was, it's two things. I think, well, first of all, Morph not being included in the opening introduction credits should have been a big tip off to anyone. I mean, that probably definitely flew over most kids watching the show at the time.
Yeah,
you never would have paid attention to that.
I didn't even pay attention to it now.
Right, you know? Yeah.
You just said it was the first time I thought of that, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, that's the first tip-off for Morph's, you know, how long-lasting he would be. But I think they, you know, they wanted to establish that the show had some stakes, that what the X-Men do is generally not safe. I don't know if that's a message they're trying to impart to children, that, hey, kids, don't try this at home. You could die.
Mm.
Or you could end up like Beast, arrested and electrocuted. I think there's several reasons why they got rid of Morph. And, you know, like I said, he's not a real X-Man.
Right. But then why have him? It's not like his power played some really integral role in the storytelling so far. It's kind of just a party trick where maybe they're just establishing the wide world of mutants and what the possibilities are. But they're going to have Mystique later, so it's not like Morph is really needed for that anyway.
Well, I mean, you know, Morph's powers are useful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like a party trick.
But they didn't use it in a...
Well, they used it to break into the mutant control base.
Okay, but I mean, they could have found another way to do that.
I mean, yeah, they probably just could have blasted their way in. They didn't need Morph to knock the guard out.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, he's pretty weak. And, you know, he's just he's really got very little protection.
The other thing is his death kind of still doesn't make sense, because the whole thing with the X-Men is that they're very quick on their feet. Something happens and they rush in and, like, they can adapt easily to a lot of situations. And Morph, when he dies, he's kind of just, like, standing there. Like,
okay.
He gets, like, blasted by the Sentinel, right? But instead of, like, turning to Wolverine and going, like, look out, you know.
He does say look out.
He does, but what he could have done was turned himself into a more powerful X-Man and, like, retaliated
like
against
large,
the Sentinels right
like,
away.
Like, metal, like, beast or something.
Or any X-Man that has, like, firepower or,
well,
like,
I don't,
defenses
I mean,
against Sentinels.
That's an interesting question. We don't know, like, what powers Morph can use when he transforms into another mutant, really. He can change his size. I don't know if that makes him stronger than he's supposed to be.
Mm.
But, you know, to me, the most senseless thing about Morph's death, and this has bothered me in my entire life, and I'm glad I now have the platform to talk about this. Morph... Okay, so the X-Men, they've destroyed the mutant registration files. They're escaping. Everything looks good. They're all making different quips.
That's true. They're really punchy with their dialogue.
With their
dialogue
quips.
There.
Yeah, Wolverine says, come on, we're going to be late for dinner.
Yeah.
And Gambit says something, and Rogue is taunting all the, like, security guards they're dumping in the river.
Yeah. They're really feeling good on their way out
of that place. Yeah, and they're really working as a team. Like, Cyclops turns around and destroys, like, a guard tower. Yeah. And,
like, Rogue swoops in and makes sure that the guard doesn't die, like...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're really functioning in a really, they're in a high-functioning mode.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, the Sentinels come out of the woods and surprise them. And, you know, Wolverine's prepared for this. He pops his claws and immediately taunts the Sentinels with one of his lines. Like, you know, prepare to taste adamantium or something like that. And, but, Morph freaks out and feels he has to save Wolverine. He pushes him out of the way, and the Sentinels all, like, laser blast Morph at the same time, and mm-hmm. he dies.
Yeah.
And...
That's what I'm saying. He's an X-Man. Like, where are his defenses?
Okay. To me, that's not the issue.
Okay.
The issue is Morph's stupidity in sacrificing himself for the invincible Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
Wolverine, who has an unbreakable adamantium skeleton, a near-instantaneous healing factor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really hard to kill Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
You, like, I think it was established in the comics that the way to kill him is you have to, like, sever his head from his body for a long period of time, like, because he has a way to... Yeah, he has a way to, like, zombie, make his whatever. Body, like, reattach his head to his... to his torso.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, Wolverine has been in a nuclear explosion.
But does Morph know this about him?
I mean, Morph
they're
should...
They're pals.
Yeah, they're pals.
Wolverine is, like, new to the X-Men, though-ish, right?
He's, well, like, kind of we don't know. I mean, X-Men. It seems that Wolverine is new to the team.
Morph might not know that about him. Morph's trying to, like, save his friend.
I'm sure Morph has seen in the Danger Room or on other missions. They've clearly been on other missions. I don't think that's deniable.
Yeah.
That Wolverine, if he's, you know, shot in the head, the bullet will... dislodge itself within a minute from his skull harmlessly,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the blood will also disappear.
Right. He'll, like, grunt a little bit and then he's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's already been established that a guy like Gambit, who is not super strong, he gets shot by a laser beam by the Sentinels and survives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just so stupid of Morph to sacrifice his own life to save Wolverine's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's my first biggest issue with that. And
okay.
And it's just so sad that Morph, you know, it's like me pushing Wolverine out of the way to save him.
You know what, though? I wonder if they, at that time, with this cartoon, if they did, like, you know, any type of focus groups or anything with these episodes, and just, like, people didn't like Morph or something. Because the personality they give him actually is not great. His power is really cool. But he's kind of, like, conniving, and he has, like, an annoying little giggle he does, and he's, like, a weird guy.
He's, like, a wise guy. I mean, well, I think his weirdness is actually kind of, like, interesting, because he's someone who can change into any person, and they show him in the first episode watching TV and changing into every person he sees on TV.
Yeah.
He's kind of, like, demented in a weird way.
That's what I mean, though, is, like, his power is awesome, that, like, kids want to see more
right,
of that.
But it's damaged his mind and made, like, him weird and annoying.
Yeah, yeah. His actual personality is not
I mean, as a kid, whatsoever. As a kid, I actually thought he was a weird person. Like, I wouldn't have wanted to hang out with him.
Exactly.
I thought he was, you know, he actually reminded me of weird kids I knew at school. For some. I mean, so, but don't worry, he's dead. I mean, does he come back? I mean, we'll find out.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess we answered our question finally.
Right. And then, well, what was our question?
Why
they got rid of Morph. I think the writers of the show wanted to establish a certain tone.
Okay.
They didn't want to make it
a real
seem
high stakes scenario.
Yeah, they didn't want to
but
make it seem
he's
that
like a weird, annoying character. So,
well, I think that's incidental. I think that's just your personal thing, okay. Like that you're not so into. You were happy to see Morph die.
Yeah. Don't go that
Me
far.
Personally, I felt bad for Morph.
All right.
And then you know, and also in this climactic fight, Beast is captured.
Yeah. That's
which
a real
is sad.
Shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the reasoning... There actually was reasoning for this. I read about this. Was that basically the writers of the show we're told to not focus on Beast as much.
Why?
I don't think he tested well as a character.
Huh.
I don't think the network liked Beast. So they put him in jail for Beast ends up in prison for the most of the first season.
Yeah, I know. That's a shame. I always liked that character.
Yeah, and it turns out the writers really liked him too. They love writing all his little quips and everything.
Yeah.
He quotes Archimedes in this episode.
Well, because they give him a
some
really
other philosopher.
Endearing personality. He's like super kind and smart. And
I mean, Beast is one of the greatest X-Men characters in any form. In the comics, yeah. On TV, in the movie. Well, I mean, the movies didn't really do him so much justice.
No. Well, he's much younger. Again, same as with Rogue, right? In the movies.
Well, I was thinking of the Kelsey Grammer.
Oh.
Well, in X-Men 3, it was cast well. Kelsey Grammer is like the perfect guy to cast if you want to portray the cartoon Beast from this show.
Yeah, right.
That is like the ultimate casting.
Yeah.
And then the guy they had for the other movies, Nicholas Holt.
Yeah.
He's pretty good, but he's just like the young Beast.
He's pretty good, but like Beast is supposed to be like
a little more when he's like self-possessed. In the newer movies, he's a little.
But also the physical presence, like in the cartoon, Beast is really. Like, he's as wide as he is tall, basically, you know?
So, yeah, in the movies, they don't really.
Beast, he's like this lanky guy that. Yeah.
He's a little too small. He's not.
Which I think actually makes a difference, like, in how you perceive him as a character.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely, I agree. But they didn't quite hit the mark on that Beast.
But again, the timeline is different. It's, like, decades earlier.
Yeah.
So.
Well, actually, I mean, in X-Men Apocalypse, like, 2 decades have technically passed since we first met Beast in X-Men First Class.
Right.
But, you know, of course, because those movies were made within, like, 5 years of each other, the actor did not age. Yeah. He aged from, like, you know, age 25 to 30 or something.
Right.
So.
Essentially the same.
Right. Okay, so, I mean, so poor Beast. So yeah. Beast is left behind.
Too bad.
And then this leads to it's probably the best scene in the entire animated series. I'm gonna go on a limb in the second episode we're doing.
I'm not gonna second that, but go ahead.
Well, I've I'm convinced.
All right.
They get off the Blackbird, they've retreated, and Wolverine is furious. Cyclops gets off the plane first, and he's kind of sad. He's just made a tough call of leaving Morph and Beast behind. And then Wolverine, you know, shouts out to him. He's like, "Hey, Cyclops!" And then Cyclops is like, "I know how you feel about it, Wolverine." And then Cyclops takes an enormous punch to the stomach from Wolverine.
Yeah.
And then
He's like, "Next time I'm going to use the claws or something." Right. They're having this like whole heated argument about it. Cause
next time I use these. Shink!
Yeah.
And Cyclops is ready to blow him away with his optic blasts. And then Jean comes in and breaks it
Defuses it.
That is an awesome scene. I love that scene. It's amazing how intense it gets between those two characters right there. And then you see Wolverine ask Jean, like, you know, like, "Soldier Boy left them behind. Morph and Beast could still be alive." And then Jean Grey breaks it to Wolverine that Beast is alive, but Morph is dead.
Right.
And she goes to cry, and you know, Wolverine wants Jean to cry on his shoulder, on his weird shoulder pad things. But instead she cries on Cyclops' shoulder because they're, like, engaged or something. And
it's
you
shame.
See
their
yeah.
weird shoulder sleeves, the power could have really combined.
Yeah. But and then you see Wolverine is completely annoyed by that, too. That compounds his tragedy because he loves Jean, and they introduce that element right there.
Yeah.
And Gambit tries to console Wolverine, but he's not going for that. And then to close out this amazing scene, Wolverine goes to the X-Men garage and destroys Cyclops' car. He makes it into a convertible and drives off to stew in his misery.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like that scene too also establishes the X-Men garage of many cars and motorcycles, which is another thing they put in
movies. I
thought
you were going to say the love triangle of, like, Cyclops, Jean Grey,
yeah.
Wolverine.
Oh, right, that too. Yeah.
But yeah, also all the fabulous vehicles that they own.
So, I mean, that was, like, a really emotionally heavy and intense scene. And, you know, I think it was a little unfair, Wolverine blaming Cyclops entirely. For a couple of reasons. One, if you watch the episode closely, which we just did, Cyclops is trying to fight off all the Sentinels. He's blasting them all away, and he's kind of getting overrun, but he's not retreating or quitting. But Storm flies in and says, Cyclops, we gotta retreat. And she physically takes Cyclops off the battlefield. And, you know, I guess at that point Cyclops realizes it's a lost battle.
Yeah.
So she's just as complicit in this decision, which is kind of interesting.
Well,
they
all are, is the thing. Because, yeah. Like, Gambit and Rogue gets hurt, right? Gambit carries her out. And then as soon as all the Sentinels show up...
Does she?
Gambit carries her out at first. And then as soon as all the Sentinels show up, she's, like, feeling better. She's like, oh, gotta go. Too many of these guys. And
she flies Gambit away. Right, yeah,
Storm
you're right.
Storm flies Cyclops out.
Yeah.
Like...
They're retreating.
Yeah.
Wolverine's not ready to quit.
There's, like, so many Sentinels, and they're in danger, so...
Right.
They get out of there.
Yeah, but, you know, and I just wanted to point out, too, that Storm is also technically the co-leader of the team as well.
Mm.
She's second in command. And that's something from the comic books. At that time, when they're making X-Men comics, Cyclops was the leader of what they called the Blue Team,
mm-hmm.
and Storm was the leader of what they called the Gold Team. And those comics were split between regular X-Men and Uncanny X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
That's just another nerdy side point. But anyway, and then so what happens is Wolverine's going to bust back into the forest and take on Sentinels and rescue Beast and Morph. But Rogue stops him. She absorbs his power, which is the first time we see that. Or I guess she doesn't absorb his power. She just kind of knocks him out by touching him.
Well, yeah, she absorbs his power, but then she...
That's not the point, right? Yeah.
She
knocks him out.
She has to absorb his life force
right.
so that he can't
yes.
barge in there and get himself killed.
And, you know, to me, that's another point where I feel like the X-Men, they really chickened out. And I also side with Wolverine again. Wolverine, like I said, he's invincible. You know, he could go in there and defeat, I think, 15 to 20 Sentinels by himself. I don't think he'd have any problem. He's also had, like, you know, 150 years of tactical soldiering experience. He's fought in, like, 5 wars. He's been a secret agent. I think he could bust in there and rescue 2 guys. He's probably done it dozens of times in his various lifespans. And I don't think the X-Men understood just how good Wolverine is.
Mm-hmm.
And that must have been really frustrating to him of how he was stopped by these losers. So, you know, I'm all about Wolverine, like, going in commando solo style and rescuing his friends. But that's neither here nor there. So, you know, after that scene, Wolverine essentially, I mean, he doesn't, like, outright quit the X-Men. But Cyclops seems to think he's quit.
Well, yeah, because he takes the car, he gets out of there.
Right, yeah.
He's at some bar playing pool,
right.
getting himself into trouble again.
And we see Wolverine in his first street clothes.
Yeah, that's
ding,
right.
Ding, ding, ding.
And Cyclops.
Yes, and Cyclops.
When he comes in. And
right.
he's not even wearing the visor at that point.
No.
He's got, like, the sunglasses.
The awesome sunglasses.
And...
Which I've tried to find. I've tried to find red sunglasses just like those in a million stores. And I could... They might exist somewhere. I've just never found them.
Yeah.
I've tried searching them online, too. I can't find them, you know.
Right. So...
I want the 90s style. I don't want some, like, newer style. I want those specific with, like, almost, like, hexagonal... You know, like cutaway there.
Uh-huh.
Whatever.
That might be the reason you haven't found them.
Right. Yeah. Well.
I don't know.
But anyway, we see Wolverine in street clothes, which are become his. Those are pretty much his standard street clothes for the rest of the series. Some kind of like
the flannel or plaid jacket. Thing.
Right. Yeah. And like with the furry collar.
Yeah,
and
well,
his jeans.
He's like a Canadian mountain man.
Yeah. Yes, his Canadian mountain man, like, bar-going outfit.
Yeah,
yeah,
they have to establish that.
And Cyclops wears his, like slick Tom Cruise clothing, you know.
Right, the what is that, like a blazer?
Well, it's got, like, khakis.
With, like, the sleeves rolled up.
Yeah, he looks really cool. I think all the X-Men have pretty good street clothes fashion. I'm guessing Professor X lets them use his credit card and go shopping, which is what... They presumably do all the time. In the first episode, they're just at the mall buying things. So,
right.
You know, they're living it up in Westchester.
Because,
well, they don't have to make money. Know. Professor X is a billionaire.
Right, yeah.
You know, I'm sure he played the stock market or something, like, illegally to get a massive fortune.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, we don't know about that. So, yeah, we see Cyclops in street clothes, and And the point of that scene is Cyclops has to convince Wolverine to rejoin the team by proposing a different mission. Not a rescue of Beast, but an invasion of where they're actually manufacturing the Sentinels.
Right, so it's in like Detroit. A revenge of all
they're doing it in a, like, abandoned car factory.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it's more like a revenge mission.
Right. And that really intrigues Wolverine.
Totally works.
Yeah. Cyclops knows just how to recruit him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to see them patch it up a little bit there.
Isn't that weird, though, in the bar, like, the guys that Wolverine is playing pool with, mm-hmm. they get into this, like, altercation right. with Cyclops also, and they lift off those sunglasses that we talked mm-hmm. about, and the laser beams start shooting out of his eyes.
Yeah.
Can't he just close his eyes?
Yeah,
Does
but
he choose not to close his eyes because he wants to pose a threat to, like...
That's a good question, because he taunts him at first. He says something very cool, like, you wouldn't hit a man with glasses, would you? As right. if he's expecting them to remove his glasses.
Yeah.
But then they do, and he kind of freaks out and destroys everything.
Yeah.
And
does he not have control over that? Are the laser beams too powerful for him to be able to, like, close his eyelids?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, in general, he has no control. If his eyes are open... Just even, like, a fraction of, like, a millimeter, uh-huh. the laser beams come out.
Uh-huh.
His eyes have to be slammed shut for them not to come out.
Uh-huh.
So if it happens really fast, then, yeah, maybe they'll just come out real quick. But, I mean, I don't know. It's like, come on, Cyclops, close your eyes right away the second you're...
he's in this bar destroying things. I'm like, get it together, man.
Well, yeah, but you're right, though. Maybe he did it purposefully to scare these guys, these toughs who... interesting, they established that these are humans that hate mutants.
Right.
You know, they're ready to beat up Wolverine because he's a mutant freak.
Right. But they also...
And one of the guys...
say something to him about, like, how he's got, like, a hairy face or something. Yeah. And yet, like, you look at, like, Wolverine's face and it's like he's got those, like, long sideburns. But that's it. And
well, Wolverine has fangs.
But the guys themselves...
He does have fangs.
Okay, but they're not talking about his fangs. They're talking about his hairy face.
Is that what they say?
Something like that. And then, like, the guys themselves have, like, full,
like
shaggy
beards.
Yeah. And...
Yeah, those guys are taken directly out of, like, Easy Rider.
Yeah.
They're, like, former hippies. And one of the actors doing the voices sounds just like Jack...
Nicholson. Yeah.
That's kind of, like, a weird reference. Very bizarre. But anyway, we get
interesting scene, though, because they're,
our first taste of human prejudice.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. All right, and then, the episode carries on. And, you know, some other things, we see some interesting details. We meet the President of the United States.
The woman president,
yes.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And unlike, you know, Hillary Clinton, this woman president is very clearly a Southerner. Like, she's got a very thick Southern accent.
Why are you, like, contrasting that with Hillary Clinton?
I don't know. Because she's, like, the other almost female president in our reality.
Unlike Margaret Thatcher.
Well, I'm just saying, Hillary Clinton...
This woman has a Southern accent.
Right, yeah. Unlike Margaret Thatcher, who's a British woman, this woman has a very deep Southern accent. She's very matronly and...
She's not matronly, I don't think.
No, I guess you're right. She's got, like, maybe she has, like, a matronly attitude.
I don't know. I think she's a very reasonable human being.
Well, wait. That's questionable.
Well, she's the one that calls for, like, the Sentinel program to be shut down.
But she kind of authorized it in the first place.
But maybe she didn't know what it was or the full extent of it.
I mean, then that's just, like, she was not doing her job because their plan was to make, like, you know, 80-foot-tall robots that are...
But actually, she doesn't say anything about the Sentinels now that I think about it. She says to shut down the mutant tracking program. So it's possible... She says the privately run mutant tracking program or something like that. So it's possible she doesn't know anything about the Sentinels and that she thinks that this guy is just doing some private investigation to track down the mutants and, like, keep a registry of them and that's it. So when she says, like, you know, shut that down...
She's shutting down... everything, because in the next scene, Gyrick, who runs the program, tells Bolivar Trask, the inventor of the Sentinels, that the government has just shut us down, we have to move overseas.
Yeah.
And trust me, she's the president of the United States. There's no way she doesn't know about the Sentinels, because the Sentinels, first of all, just destroyed, like, downtown Westchester's mall.
Right.
And, like, their city blocks. Like, the president of the United States would be alerted to those happenings.
Okay, so
she definitely knows about the Sentinels.
Choices in the past, but...
poor choices.
All I'm saying is she's making it right in this episode. She's like, listen, you gotta stop this.
Like I said, if I was a citizen in this America, if I had not fled the country in fear of the Sentinels, I would be on the front lines of the protest movement calling for this president's impeachment, saying, like, this is the most dangerous president ever to authorize a defense system this
or
ludicrous.
You'd be like,
this is,
oh
like,
my
straight
God.
Out of a comic book.
The Sentinels that's are what I would coming say. After all the mutants. I better not be near any mutants, you know? I think that's, like, if it was the real world, like, I feel like that would be...
I mean, if you know, like, a human we saw interacting with a mutant was the guy who owned the arcade that got pissed at Jubilee for blowing up his arcade machine.
Yeah.
If I was that guy, and then I saw – I'm either dealing with this little 14-year-old girl who destroys my arcade machine very innocently, or I'm dealing with a 90-foot sentinel that destroys my place of business mm-hmm. where I work at this mall. I'm more afraid of the robot.
Right. Yeah.
So I think she's a terrible president. And, you know, spoilers, it's no surprise she ends up losing the presidency at the end of the season to Senator Kelly. So.
Yeah, but she, in, like, the spectrum of, like, the good characters and the bad characters.
Well, she makes one good decision, yeah.
She's trying to shut down the Sentinel program. Like, she's way better than Senator Kelly.
She's pretty blasé about it, the way she sets it. She does the right thing, but she's not as alarmed as she should be. She's working out in her presidential, like, workout clothes with the presidential seal on them.
Uh-huh.
She's somehow put, like, a Nordic track machine in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
I guess she really loves to work out, like, right by her desk, which is funny, too. So, I don't know. You're right. She has a good moment, but overall, she's a terrible president. It's pretty clear. Country's falling apart. all right. What else do we have for this episode? We talked about the fight between Cyclops and Wolverine and the establishment of the love triangle. And, you know, and basically the episode wraps up. They go and rescue Jubilee, who got captured again by these Sentinel goons. You know, the X-Men, they rescue her, and we get to see them really unleash their powers against the Sentinels.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think there, you know, one last thing I'll mention is I think there's some inconsistency with the powers we see on display.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But that's a really kind of iconic fight scene.
Yes.
There at the end. Like, that X-Men music from, like, the opening credits
yeah,
is playing.
Yeah, it really pumps
you
up.
And you
really
see, like, each of the X-Men using their powers
right.
to the best of their ability. And
well,
it's...
I mean, I'll just point out some details. Like, we see Gambit's cards, like, really destroy a Sentinel.
Yeah.
Like, he falls to pieces. Where earlier we saw his cards just kind of explode on the surface of their armor. So it's like, you know, was Gambit not charging his cards up enough to begin with? You know, that's
yeah,
one
a cartoon.
Thing.
What, you want to do physics?
Listen,
about
yeah,
it?
That's
like,
why we're here.
What if, like, in an enclosed space,
yeah.
He's at closer range,
okay,
and
right.
so the cards
it
have more
could
effect.
Be his range. I mean, but the same applies to Cyclops. Sometimes he blasts the Sentinels and they're knocked backwards, and sometimes he blows their heads off with one clean shot.
You gotta hit the sweet spot.
Yeah, maybe you're right. And maybe these Sentinels weren't quite finished yet because they're attacking, like, the manufacturing facility.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It's a kid's cartoon. I'm not too bothered.
But then we do see how strong Rogue is. A Sentinel,
yeah.
like, bashes her on the back while she's flying, and she face plants Bugs Bunny style into
yeah.
the cement floor and is, like, several inches deep. And she gets up in 2 seconds and beats the Sentinel up. So she can really take a licking.
That animation sequence actually is really great because,
yeah.
like, she's way smaller than that Sentinel, but... they make it look really believable when she, like, picks one up and, like, flips it over.
Right, yeah, that's pretty good.
It's really well done.
Very well executed action sequence. And then we see Wolverine really carve a Sentinel up and just show you how he would have been fine, I think, if he was able to take on, you know, a bunch of Sentinels by himself. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's pretty much it for the introduction of the X-Men here. That's the conclusion of the first two-parter that opens up the series. I think it's, you know, in the grander scheme of the entire show, it's a total classic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could rewatch those first two episodes many times, and I have. You know, there's something about the best thing about them to me is like the quips are totally on point in the first two episodes. Mm-hmm. A lot of the different X-Men get a lot of great lines in, especially Gambit and Wolverine. And Rogue, like
cheesy one-liners.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially fresh in like these first two episodes.
Yeah,
I think as we see going on, a little bit of the writing gets duller in that respect. You know, it's not quite as it's not quite as sharp as mm-hmm. it is in the first two episodes. So we get that. You know, actually, I noticed watching part two, the animation seemed a little jankier in part two compared to part one. And there's like famous stories about how the animation was never really completed for part two, or, you know, those first two episodes in general. There's a lot of production mistakes and everything.
Famous stories, huh?
Yeah. They're really famous stories that I read about in an in-depth New York Times magazine article. Yeah. So, you know, the animation will pick up in quality as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's interesting to point out is that what's another milestone about the show, and kind of unprecedented for a cartoon, and in a lot of ways a dramatic series for its time, was that the X-Men follows a season-long story arc.
Mm-hmm.
This whole season is more or less about the Sentinels and the X-Men's fight against them, and that's how it concludes. Mm-hmm. I mean, other villains are introduced along the way. There's other sort of one-off episodes. But the overall thread line is about the Sentinel threat. And I think that's sort of ahead of its time in its way, too.
Hmm.
And very interesting to note as we're going to go through here going forward.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that's all I have to say. Do you have any parting thoughts on Night of the Sentinels Part 1 or 2?
I think you look more nervous than a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs.
Well, I think we should just leave it there. But remember to stick around, subscribe to the podcast. If you like it, tell all your friends, rate us 5 stars, do all that fun stuff, because we'll be back for episode 3, Enter Magneto.
All right, see you then.
All right, good night.